My name is Nick Rushdie. Nick Hassan, that's my long name.
My name is Hazli Murni Hashim, but I'm called by Nani for short.
We are originally from Malaysia. Actually, we've been students, rather, in the US since the early 90s and decided to settle in Minnesota. We moved to Minnesota in 2002. I'm teaching at the University of Minnesota Duluth in the School of the Leibovitz School of Business and Economics, and I teach management information systems.
What happens was, well, when he was a student in Texas, all our kids went to school there. I mean, three of them. So when we went back to Malaysia in 1996, they were having trouble with the school in Malaysia because everything was taught in Malay language. And after a few years, and we decided to come back just for their sake.
Nani, tell me about your children.
The first one, 27, going to be 27. Daughter, she's in medical school and she'll be finishing this spring. The second one is in a boy in Hawaii now. He's in business, doing business school. The third just graduated last fall, a daughter, looking for a job. And the fourth is in the junior year, doing biomedical engineering. The fifth is doing graphic design. He's a sophomore. And we have a nine-year-old, Hamza. He's in third grade now.
We arrived here in August, and that was after 9/11, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the first problem we had was, because after 9/11, and I think the government was changing the way it was processing visas. So even though I was accepted by the school to come and work, I was right in the middle of it. In fact, what happened was I interviewed after 9/11. So I was in Malaysia when that happened. And when we saw it, you know, I think the event changed something in me. I don't know about Nani, but in me, it kind of spoke to me and says, look, okay, I mean, now I really need to go to the U.S. because this is not right. Whatever that was happening wasn't right. And it gave me kind of the incentive, the motivation to a greater motivation to move after that event. I think the consideration for the positive challenge was what I was looking at. I think the negative challenge was going to happen regardless. And I think there was a feeling that, you know, good will overcome evil regardless of how you go about doing it, as long as you press on and do what you need to do. I think that the perception was that people sympathize, people really, really sympathize with America, sympathize to the extent that they were all out for, you know, America at that time. And that was what was going on. Until, I mean, that was what happened in September, in the months after September 11. Until, of course, came, you know, the attack on Afghanistan, all the things, funny things happening to Muslims by, you know, parties in the U.S. And then I think the tide started changing after that. Then they were saying, look, you know, we know that's wrong, we sympathize with you, but the reaction is not exactly the, you know, the kind of thing we expected from, you know, we know better. You should know better than to do whatever they did. So by the time it got to the time we were going to leave, people were just saying, you're crazy to go to U.S. That time, and then me, and everybody was the kind of, don't do this and do this, and, you know, that sort of thing. But our mind was made up. I think the children's interest was paramount that time, and basically it's just trust in God and that He will take care of us, and basically that was it. And we couldn't get a flight until August 23rd, and August 2026, I had to go to work. So we were August 27th. We arrived 24th. August 26th, I had to report to work, and school was starting in September. So I barely had like 2 weeks to do anything. So you know, of course, the people here were frantic because I was supposed to be teaching in the fall. No books, you know, no teacher, and so they were sending things over, expecting me to prepare for the class while I was in Malaysia. So that was what was going on at that time. So it was an interesting experience. So we packed everything. Actually brought with us 20 boxes, 20 U-Haul boxes with us on the plane.
And six kids in tow.
We kind of felt that we were back home, believe it or not, even after six years in Malaysia. And it was easier to get around. So we took a red-eye flight from Los Angeles to Minneapolis. I had rented a van, packed up all the 20 boxes, six kids, everybody was... It was a 25-hour flight from Malaysia. It was another 4 hours flight from Los Angeles to Minneapolis overnight. Hamza was crying all night because he was tired. And so we took turns taking him to the bathroom, to the toilet in the back of the plane, because we didn't want people screaming at us for waking up overnight. And then the van drove up to Duluth, and then ended up in Duluth and found a hotel. And was there for 2 days, the hotel, 2 days. And, you know, we couldn't find a rental because it was already close to school time openings. Everybody, all the rentals were taken up. So we had to stay in the hotel for a while until we found a house that would accommodate six kids and two adults. This house, yes. Yes, yes. We it was, alhamdulillah, it was, and it was a nice family that were the owners of the house, who was kind enough. We told them what was going on, that I had to teach in a matter of a few days, and I wasn't able to do that from a hotel room. So they agreed to rent it out to us when as they moved out to their new home, and in a matter of about a week we negotiated a closing.
And when we came into the house, oh my goodness, the neighbors are so nice. I mean, we didn't expect that at all, especially after 9/11. Right. They came with jackets and with food and
flowers to
welcome us.
Yeah, the neighbors came with a box and knocked on the door and said, "We heard you're moving in." And we said, "Yes." Here's this is for you, to welcoming gift. And we knew that moment that it was going to be okay. Yeah, we knew it was going to be okay. I think we had to get the kids to school, of course. That was the challenge. We went to meet up with the teachers, and the kids were already big. Most of them were teenage age. So they had to pray five times a day. So one of the challenges we faced, of course, was we made sure that they can pray during school, and that was a challenge. We had to take them out for Friday prayers, for service. Every Friday, Muslims pray. So I had to make arrangements for that. We discovered that there's no halal food, of course, in Duluth. Mm-hmm. So we had to make arrangements for that as well. No, we were basically the only Muslims in the school. They were at that time, I think, there were not that many Muslims, and definitely not with kids that their age. So they were the only ones that stood out. In fact, there were not even, I think in 2002, there were not even many African Americans in Duluth schools. Today you can find a few of those, a few more. So they were definitely stood out. So we had to spend a lot of time talking to the counselors, the advisors, to figure out, you know, if they're experiencing any problems. And of course, there was an issue of getting them adjusted to the school system and how things were taught here. Mm-hmm. They had gotten used to the Malaysian system already, somewhat.
We eat lots of fish in Malaysia, so fried fish and curry and grilled fish.
Actually, I was I was deceived. I was kind of deceived in a way when we came by, when I interviewed. One of the reasons why I decided to settle in Minnesota was because of Lake Superior. Thinking that we would get a lot of fish here. That was the expectation. But we found out that fish has long gone. It's been long gone. It's no longer fished and not in the amount that it was used to be. Yeah, so before before the lake got poisoned, there were a lot of fish, but no longer. So we have to go down to the cities to find a fish. but I chose Duluth because there was a growing community of Muslims. Not big, but enough to, at least provide some support for the family. So that was one of the major reasons why we decided for Duluth. And I had met with the president of the Islamic community, the society here, the Islamic center here. And he was the one that also welcomed us when we moved into the hotel and took us around and showed us around and all that. And so I was immediately, basically, immediately moved into the social group. And that helped a lot because at least you're not alone in trying to adjust, get accustomed. So there was somebody that we could ask about where to get halal food, for example. There was somebody we could ask about where do you pray. Luckily, the school actually had a huge contingent of Muslims in the 80s. There were like hundreds and hundreds of students from Malaysia that went to UMD, the school here. And so the administration wasn't unfamiliar. They weren't unfamiliar with Muslims in general. So when they knew that I was Muslim, they welcomed and said, yeah, we know you. We've actually supplied the students there with halal chicken and, went to slaughter, that sort of thing. So there were a few things that helped out, and we also made friends. Halal food simply means permitted food. And basically, it has to do with the rules surrounding the preparation of the food, in particular, the food that pertains to the food that comes from, animals that's slaughtered. So it has to be slaughtered in a certain way, pretty similar to how people view kosher food, except it's not as stringent in terms of its rules. So it has to be done in a humane, clean, and systematic manner. And then if it's done in that way, of course, when you kill an animal, you kill it for a good reason, for consumption, for food, and not for fun and things like that. So halal food has those stipulations. There was, out of that huge contingent, there were a few of the students that got married to local people here. And they stayed, they got married and stayed here. So we met two families that married to Americans, Malaysians that married to Americans. So they were the ones that were also, we started visiting each other. So there were a few things that helped out. So I think overall the experience was good. Now, one of the reasons why I guess I moved was I wanted to show to myself, I wanted to prove to myself that, even in a situation where there weren't many Muslims, where there were not a lot of help, that if we did the right things, Allah will help, God will help us. And I guess it sounds a little silly in the sense that, why do you do that and risk your family, create trouble, I guess, for your family. But I think it worked out. I think that we learned a lot from the process, and we're still learning from all this. So overall, I think the experience was good. This is my personal take on the question, and I think this is something that a lot of people understand Muslims as a group of people that worships some other deity, some other god. And of course, they have no idea of what we aspire for, what we look for, and what we see in as a purpose in life and things like that. And what I think I'd like to say, if it's of any use to the audience here, is that number one, if we believe that this is the same God, right, that everybody worships, then obviously this God has to be a good God, a wise God, and an all-powerful God, and all that. And so the same things that we aspire for, or that we should work towards, the things that we should work towards are common. There's a lot of the same values and the same aspirations we share. So if, for example, if somebody says, okay, you have to be fair or you have to be just, then everybody should benefit from that justice. So my sense of justice is the same sense of justice that you have. And I think that if everybody works towards that, then in my opinion, then that is probably the worthy goal. Because in my understanding, if you pull together all these values, these good values, then you're a Muslim. You're no different than us. And that's what I believe Islam is. Islam is getting towards that natural goodness that is given to us from our birth, going back to that natural goodness that comes inherently in us as human beings. We may have swayed away from it, or, you know, been prevented from reaching that goodness for whatever reason, you know, misunderstanding or even, you know, evil intentions, whatever it is that people are preventing it from being reached. But if we do reach it, then that is the goal of Islam. So that's why I don't see that this is so-called clash of civilization, or, you know, the difference between the two groups of people, Muslims and non-Muslims. I don't see it as that. That is not what it should be. It should be Muslims and to be Muslims, you know, because that's what everybody should be going for. And you might not want to label it Muslims. You should just label it as being the natural human being. So the natural human being is that goal that Islam has. So there shouldn't be any conflicts between. And if there is, then that conflict is caused by something unnatural. That conflict is caused by something that shouldn't be there in the first place. So that's probably one of the reasons why I don't see a problem coming to a place where there's no Muslims and living here and the kids, you know, adjusting, because what we're going after is exactly the same thing everybody else is going after, as long as it's good. So that's my take on it.
You might think that, you know, wearing hijab in America is kind of hard, especially after 9/11, but somehow I don't feel any different. I mean, I mix with the people here, no problem, they are nice to me, I'm nice to them.
Yeah, that's I do not doubt that there are elements within the Muslim community that have decided that they are the only ones that have the monopoly for the truth. They are the only ones that have the monopoly for what is right and what is wrong and the law. So it's an exclusive kind of approach to religion. And these are the ones that have become radicalized, perhaps, or have decided that if you're not with me, then you're against me, kind of attitude. I have no doubt that that's happening. I think the problem is that brushing everybody with the same brush is a dangerous act, because then it's easy to demonize, it's easy to look at somebody as being less human than you. And the moment you do that, then we have a problem. So what I think is the right approach is to clearly define this group. And this group has been in existence since the Prophet was around. So it's not like it's a new thing. There have always been people who have strong opinions, and they will do whatever they need for they think is right for their strong opinions. The problem is that these people today, because the Muslims are so broken up, you know, they are under the rule of puppet dictators and all these people. So the same group are not being controlled. There is nobody taking care, making sure this group is not creating trouble, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, back when the Muslims were together, it was easy to say, okay, look out, watch out for these troublemakers. And they can do whatever they like. They're not going to bother anybody. We can't do that today. Today, it's easier for a splinter group to do whatever they like and hijack and represent the whole Muslims when they're not supposed to. So I don't know what's going to come out from the hearing. I'm interested to see. But to be fair, there's no harm in making the correct identification. Because, like, back to what I mentioned earlier, we are all going for the same good values. And the fact that these people are doing these acts, are being allowed for whatever reason to do these acts, is wrong. And they should be made to stop from causing harm. So you can always find a scapegoat to do what you want to do. And that's what I think is not right. But if you do a proper investigation, you know, what's fair is fair, what's just is just, and justice, you can't negotiate. There's no negotiation for justice. So it's what's right should be right. Okay, that's basically what I think I have to say about the hearing.